Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
My friends, it is rare that I'll stop everything on the radio broadcast and ask you for a favor. I really want the show to be sort of outward focused. We're about other people. We're about the listeners creating a compelling, entertaining show. We're doing charity work. We're trying to help other people, all right? But every once in a blue moon, I'll stop and I'll ask for something kind of selfish. I'm guilty of using my own platform to try to meet my own goals. And I'll just play that hand up front. And this is, I'm guilty. I'm doing it now. But let me explain real fast, okay? As you probably heard, I have been preparing Ghost Stories, the audiobook, for release on Audible.com. For a September release, leading into the month of October, which of course is the month of Halloween. Well, here's what happened. Normally, Audible takes like, 3 weeks to go through QC to quality control the material before they will approve it and then release it to the public. So I submitted these 14 ghost stories, just about 4 hours of content. There were a couple of classic stories, some reinventions of a few older stories that go in whole new directions. There's brand new, fresh material. A lot of stuff. Okay. I'm really, really proud of it. It represents hundreds upon hundreds of hours and thousands of dollars invested into it. It, I think, stands against anything else in the genre. And I'm hugely proud of it and want it to succeed. I submitted to Audible. They didn't take 3 weeks to QC it and get it out for sale. They took like 4 or 5 days and it was out. It's not even Labor Day. And the book is still summer and the book's already out. So with all my promotional materials sort of teed up for the fall, now I'm scrambling just a little bit. And I want to ask for a favor because my desire was to try to promote the hell out of this thing and get it noticed on the new releases section on the homepage of new releases, and also hopefully for a few days at the bestsellers as people are searching for ghost stories and they're interested in ghost stories. This is that time of year, especially the next 60 days. I'm asking you if you would consider getting the book. If you already have an Audible account, if you would use a credit. The book is called Ghost Stories, Original Tales, and Ghostly Urban Legends by Seth Andrews. Okay, use a credit. If you don't have an account, I'm going to put a link in the description box that Audible provides me as an author. And what it does is, and this is not something Audible's paying for, this is not a sponsor, this is just a resource they gave me that you can take advantage of if you want. You can get a free 30-day trial with Audible using the link in the description box. You get a free month, and then you get a free audiobook, and you can make that audiobook Ghost Stories by Seth Andrews. And then you can just decide for yourself if you want to stick with Audible or not. Like, I love Audible.com, and I use it a lot. I listen to them when I'm traveling, mowing the lawn, cooking, whatever. I mean, I'm always rolling audiobooks on my phone. But you can just decide after 30 days if you want to stick with Audible or not, so there's no pressure. But you can get Ghost Stories for free with that link in the description box. And if you're really feeling wild and crazy, just go freaking buy it. I think it runs $14-$15 at audible.com. I would be tremendously grateful. Selfish request? Yeah. But honestly, if you've ever gotten any benefit from the podcast, the Ghost Stories podcast, any of the production that's come out of this studio, if you've ever gotten benefit from anything that I have ever produced for you for free, you'd be doing me a favor if you'd go support the book Ghost Stories by Seth Andrews right now here in the month of September. And then let's watch audible.com and see if maybe the book gets noticed by a whole new audience. I'm nervous. I'm excited. And the link for the free trial for those who are not Audible members right now is again in the description box with my thanks. All right. It is episode 400, my friends. 400. We made it. Coming up later on the broadcast, I've got an interesting conversation that probably epitomizes why I do what I do. I mean, I couldn't think of a better way to mark the occasion than to talk to a couple of pastors. Well, they're ex-pastors. Oh, yeah, they're ex-pastors. It's beautiful. Oh, it's such a good story. And you're going to hear it later on in the broadcast, so hang on for that. In the meantime, we're just going to hang together and enjoy the occasion, okay?
Hello, everybody. This is Phil Ferguson, and you are not listening to The Phil Ferguson Show. This is The Thinking Atheist Show, and I just wanted to say, Seth, happy birthday. I hear that you're now 400 years old, almost half the age of Methuselah, so congratulations on being so old.
Hello, Seth. This is Mandisa Thomas from Black Nonbelievers, and I'd like to congratulate you on your 400th podcast for The Thinking Atheist.
Hey, Seth. It's Anthony Magnabosco from Street Epistemology here. You know, The Thinking Atheist was one of the first atheist-themed shows I ever listened to. Your show has helped me realize the importance of normalizing non-belief and seeing believers as people who deserve respect and compassion. You have assembled an incredible body of work that will be enjoyed by countless people for generations to come. Happy 400th episode, Seth, and here's to many, many more.
I don't know why I do the things I do to amuse myself. Like, I don't always know why, but, well, let me just tell you the story. So there's an empty lot right next to my house. Been vacant for years. There's no house built on it. The lot's for sale in the hopes that someone will come and build a house on it. Of course, you know, they might tell them that they would be building next to an atheist activist. It might devalue the property here in Oklahoma, and that's a problem. So. But anyway, the lot has been there, and it's not very well kept. Like, the mowing crews just never seem to get around to take care of this property. And so the grass and weeds and whatever, they just get really high. I mean, really high. Now, I know this is the total epitome of first world problems, okay? And I understand that. And I think you'll appreciate my approach. Because I've seen many of these people who are, I mean, they're the poster children for just bitching and moaning about first world problems. In our other house that we had, we just moved like a year and 4 months ago. But in our other house, 10 miles to the southwest of here, we lived, there was a pond in the neighborhood. And these Canadian geese would come in and, you know, they were all over the pond. And people would go out to the deck, the gazebo, and they would feed the geese. And it was just amazing. You know, these beautiful creatures would fly in and out, especially during the fall and the spring. And if you look at the neighborhood website, people were literally losing their minds over these geese. On one side, it's, these are protected creatures. People should not approach and or accost them. On the other side, you had somebody saying, these geese are a menace. They're pooping all over our yard and frightening our animals or children or whatever. And then the first side jumps back in and says, the geese were here first. You know, they are just doing what nature intended. They are a fact of life that you need to get used to. And the other people say, oh, yeah, well, I didn't climb to the top of the food chain to have geese shit all over my lawn. And people would just lose their minds. Okay. And this would go on and on. And of course, I would read them to Natalie. I would be like, this is crazy. First world problems. Yeah, there's a meme out there that it actually encourages people as a game, as a joke, to bitch about their first world problems. And the responses are always amazing. My $6 Starbucks coffee came with one less shot of espresso than I ordered. You know, the battery in my garage door opener died and I had to go and open the door manually. I had to park really far away from the mall, and it was such a long walk. There's too much goat cheese in my salad. My new Bluetooth headphones have a really short range. Can't hear them on this side of the house. This restaurant stopped serving breakfast at 10 o'clock, and I arrived at 10:05. My drone camera doesn't shoot 4K. These are the epitome of first world problems. All right. And I often have, a real awareness about these in my own life. I'll start bitching about something and I'm like, oh God, this is just first world problems. Well, this lawn next door, this is a first world problem. Somebody is not sending out the crew to mow and maintain the yard very often. And so rather than bitch about it, I decided to have some fun with it. First time around, I photoshopped Axl Rose from Guns N' Roses singing Welcome to the Jungle. And I stuck him in, I'm going to call it the field. And I posted the photo online and I tagged the property owner. And I said, you know where you are? You're in the jungle, baby. I'm just having a good time. Next day, the mowers came out and mowed it. So another period of time passes. And it's not just overgrown. It's insane. They got these big ass weeds going everywhere. It's just a jungle. Okay. So the next time, I took King Kong from Peter Jackson's remake of the classic, and I matted him out of the movie poster, and I stuck King Kong in behind this huge stack of weeds, and it looked great. And I went online to the neighborhood Facebook page, and I tagged the property owner, and I said, I'm not saying the lawn next door is getting high, but we are attracting some really weird strays. Next morning, I heard lawnmowers next door. The property was mowed. Now, these people haven't said a word to me. I'm sure they are fantasizing about coming to my house and just squirting the entire property with Roundup. All right. But I mean, I haven't been bitching about it. I'm just drawing, in a humorous way, drawing attention to the fact that this is a bit out of control. Okay. First world problems. So, yesterday, I just couldn't help myself. And the grass was again really overgrown. Weeds and big clusters of just, I don't know what it is. Just looks like a jungle. So I went into the garage and I got the mower and the weed eater. And I went out and I mowed. It took a while because it's so high. I mowed into the property. Big smiley face. There's a big, great big smile. And then there's a tiny little dot nose and then two rounded eyes that I created with the weed eater. And I held my phone way up high and I took a photograph and I put it on the neighborhood Facebook page. So any low-flying aircraft cruising by this neighborhood is going to be going through and they'll see house, 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 house. And then they're going to see just a big happy face. I haven't heard the mowers yet today. I have not. First world problems. This is what people like me do to amuse ourselves from time to time. I don't know why I told you that story. I just like sharing little meaningless anecdotes from my life. I'm in a jovial mood as we celebrate show number 400.
This is Henning.
And Jessica.
And we're from the Friendly Atheist Podcast, and we wanted to say happy 400th episode to Seth Andrews. Seth, you do such a wonderful job with your show. You're always kind of the gold standard for how to do it right and how to have something interesting to talk about that is both topical and evergreen. And people who listen to you, I think, get so much out of you. So I know I look up to you a lot.
Yeah, Seth, you were probably one of the first atheist podcasts I listened to in 2011 or so. So I owe a whole lot to you. So love to you and the rat dog.
Here's another 400.
Hi, I'm Steve.
And I'm Tally from Monster on Sunday. And we want to give a huge shout out to Seth. Congrats on your 400th episode of The Thinking Atheist.
Thank you for helping atheists across the world know that they are not alone.
It was an honor to be guests on the show and to share our music with your awesome listeners.
You rock!
Oh, I can feel the love. I feel the love coming down the receptacles of my heart.
are receiving the resonance of your positive vibrations. I feel
the love. And in all seriousness, I'm so thankful for everybody who sent in their greetings and wanted to be a part of the broadcast to mark the 400th show. So many activists and wonderful listeners who I respect and love and learn from every single day. And so to have those voices as part of this show is a big deal for me. So thank you so much to everybody who sent those in. People seem to like it when I do the preacher voice or that Southern Pentecostal voice. I don't know why I slip into it. It's just, you know, it's just fun. It makes me laugh. I didn't know how many other people would take the joke. You know, I've had a few people get offended. They'll send me a message and go, why do you make fun of Southern people? And it's like, I'm not really making fun of Southern people. I'm just sort of making fun of the culture of people that just surrender to the spirit. You know, turn off your brain. Your brain's going to deceive you. You know, turn off that reasoning machine and open up your heart and allow the ever-loving arms of the Holy Spirit to come in and just hug on your heart. You know, just hug on your heart, going to love on your heart, because that's what Jesus and the Spirit does. This is sort of pseudo-blasphemous humor that I was afraid to do when I was a believer. Now it's just funny. Now Jesus humor makes me laugh out loud. There are some awesome Jesus memes out there in the meme verse. You got the one where he's doing jazz hands and he says, oh, my dad. The jokes about white Jesus in Jerusalem. You got Raptor Jesus, where instead of holding the child in his arms, he's holding a velociraptor. You got Buddy Christ from the film Dogma. There's the one that has Jesus as Walter White under the title that says Breaking Bread. The poster that says, if you don't sin, Jesus died for nothing. I saw one the other day. It made me laugh out loud. It showed the crucifixion scene. And it said, was Jesus the first scarecrow? There's one with Jesus hanging on the cross. It's the screenshot from the old Mel Gibson Passion of the Christ film. And the caption says, not going anywhere. Try a Snickers. That'll get you banned, by the way, on Facebook. It seems like it happened years and years and years ago. And I don't know. Somebody took offense to it. I got banned last week. I make it sound like it happens all the time. It's extremely rare. I mean, those who know me know the temperature of my stuff is just so non-controversial. But I like to mock and lampoon religion, Christianity, Scientology, Jehovah's Witnesses, the Mormons. And this one was about Islam. It's got these fundamentalist Islamists who are all bowing for prayer, and somebody somewhere had taken... They'd photoshopped Minesweeper numbers over the top of them. Kind of an edgy gag, but I laughed out loud. I mean, this is what that flavor of humor is, right? You push the envelope just a little bit. But it's not hate speech. Yet that is what Facebook decided it was after somebody, I'm sure. I don't know, it could have been an atheist, could have been somebody, a progressive. It might have been an Islamist or a combination. Went and flagged it, and then Facebook boots me for 72 hours, so. Facebook jail, sat in the corner for 3 days, I'm out, and I'm back. Speaking of getting banned, have you been watching this story with Armin Navabi, the founder of AtheistRepublic.com? Short version of a long story. Armin Navabi, maybe you've seen his work, his video interviews, maybe you've heard him on the podcast here at The Thinking Atheist, but he is the founder of Atheist Republic, he is an activist. He's from Iran. He was once so devout in his belief and so afraid of going to hell that he attempted suicide before the, whatever the Islamic age of accountability is. Meaning he was thinking, if I kill myself before I hit the age of, I think it was 15 or something, then I know I'm not going to go to hell. He was that afraid of hell. He threw himself out a second story window, tried to kill himself, you know. Anyway, he escaped Islam and now he's a fierce critic of Islam, and he is fearless as he challenges the supposedly sacred figures and texts of fundamentalist Islam, hell, moderate Islam. So there's a pride parade. I guess it was in his hometown up in Canada. I think he's in Toronto. He attends the pride parade. He's holding a sign, and the sign, a handwritten sign, simply says, Allah is gay. And he has himself videoed walking through the pride parade, where the response was almost overwhelmingly positive. People were laughing and totally going along with it, okay? And he posted the video of him holding this sign at pride. He posted this on his social media page. And the death threats started almost immediately. Chilling, terrible stuff. Threatening not just Armin's life, but his wife as well. Just terrible. So Armin Navavi is trying to reveal how dysfunctional this religion is, how insecure and backward and barbaric these fundamentalists, these radicals are, and Islamic teaching in itself is. And so he posts screenshots of the death threats from these third parties. He makes montages of the screenshots and he puts them on Facebook to reveal to his many, many, many legions of viewers and listeners of what he's up against and why this religion must be opposed. Facebook then bans Armin Navavi for offensive material, for screenshotting and reposting the threats against his life. Facebook did not ban the people who were making the death threats. To my knowledge, none of those people had their accounts disabled. But Armin Navavi apparently went to log in one day, and his account was just gone. It was just deleted outright. Took him 3 days of maneuvering to get back online. And even then, there was another targeted attack against him or one of his pages or organizations or what have you. Beyond these problematic methods that Facebook uses for determining what is and isn't offensive, and good luck qualifying that word, right? That subjective term. Beyond that, I am struck by how unbelievably insecure Islam as a religion is about its supposedly all-powerful deity. I feel this way about Christianity too. If your God is truly all-powerful, knows everything, can do everything, has already won the victory, what do you care if a guy in Canada walks through a parade holding a handwritten sign that's making fun of that particular deity? If the deity's invincible, who cares? Anyway, he's back online, and good luck. Good luck silencing the voice of Armin Navavi. Like I said before, the guy is fearless, and he's making a real difference out there. He's doing a lot of great work as an advocate for people who are trying to escape fundamentalist Islam, working with them to have their voices heard, to have atheists who are sort of undercover in fundamentalist Islamic nations, trying to provide them a resource, a reminder that they're not alone, perhaps even opportunities to escape. He has done a tremendous amount with Atheist Republic and beyond, secular jihadists, and agree or disagree with the mockery of Allah in this way. There's no doubt in my mind that Armin is out there making a real positive change in the world. Good for him. On a more frivolous note, here's an argument that discussion we've been having in the Andrews house. Supposed to go to an event at my younger sister's house. We're supposed to bring a side dish. We're at the grocery store shopping. We're supposed to bring macaroni. Oh, everybody loves macaroni. Natalie reaches down and grabs the package of elbow macaroni, the classic shape of macaroni. And I'm like, no, 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 no. If you want the good stuff, if you really want to treat them, it's macaroni shells. Oh, yeah. She's like, no, people want the classic. You don't mess with a classic. It's just classic elbow macaroni. I'm like, no, the shells are like, they're like little cradles for the cheese. They feel good in your mouth. We had a whole we talked about it for like 20 minutes. Elbow macaroni, shell macaroni. I posted it on social media. The discussion continues today. People are still arguing about it. Of course, I sleep soundly in the knowledge that on this issue, I am right. Macaroni shells. This is the kind of stuff that occupies my mind. I saw a post from someone named Jesse on Facebook that ignited on social media. It showed a picture of a plate of black licorice. And the headline facetiously said, FDA issues warning about black licorice for Halloween. There's a supposed, alleged quote by the Food and Drug Administration, and it says simply, it tastes like shit. Well, as somebody who thinks black licorice tastes like you soaked a shoe in gasoline, I just can't stand the stuff. But I love red licorice. Oh, I love it so. Oh, it's so delicious. I had to put this on Facebook, and the seas divided. Opinions were divided. I put it on Twitter. Same reaction. Some of the best comments. Diana said, "This is fake news." Paul commented, "Make America love black licorice again." Philip said, "Chocolate licorice is good." Chocolate? They have chocolate licorice? Mark was eager to correct the record. He said, "Clearly you are mistaken. And there's only one kind. If it's not black, it's not technically licorice." There is a Wikipedia page on licorice. Let us travel there, my friends, and see what Wiki has to say. Licorice is a confection usually flavored with the extract of the roots of the licorice plant. A wide variety of licorice sweets are produced around the world. In North America, black licorice is distinguished from similar confectionery varieties that are not flavored with licorice extract, but commonly manufactured in the form of chewy ropes or tubes. So-called black licorice is also a widespread flavor in other forms of confectionery, such as jelly beans. Black jelly beans are nasty. They taste like you soaked a shoe in gasoline. In many countries, there is a product sometimes known as red licorice, extruded in a way to resemble licorice strings, but made with main flavorings other than licorice. Oh, crap. Mark may be correct. Such as strawberry, cherry, raspberry, or cinnamon. By the way, licorice is a word that if you say it over and over again, it stops making sense. Have you noticed? What else have we been arguing about? Oh, my God, this is a huge one. Have you ever heard the term eargasm? Let me back up and give you the history on this one before you crucify me in the comment section, okay? Every morning after her shower, Natalie cleans her ears with Q-tips. Now, I have read that this is one of the worst things you can do. Don't stick stuff in your ear, but don't stick Q-tips in your ear to clean them. It's actually really, really bad for you. But there is a name for the feeling of pleasure that many people experience when they stick a Q-tip in their ear. They call it an eargasm, okay? So I post on social media, there's a picture of a Q-tip or a drawing of a Q-tip, and it says, "Stick me in your ear. You know what to do." And I let the comments go crazy. People have very strong opinions about Q-tips in the ears. Wendy said, "I'm with your wife on that one. It feels so good." Dana said, "Life is too short to live without eargasms." Tiffany said, "Working in healthcare, Q-tips are the worst things you can put in your ears. I use these." And she posted a photograph of Clinair ear cleaners. It's got a little plastic, kind of a brush on one side of it, and a hoop, a tiny hoop on the other, like for scooping out wax. Seppi revealed that the manufacturer states on the box not to stick them in your ears. Catherine said, "Finally, a discussion topic of importance. My mission is to enjoy all the gasms that life has to offer." Of course, I'm thinking the whole time, you're jamming wax back in the ear, you're impacting the wax deeper into the ear canal where it will accumulate. What happens if you rupture the eardrum? Hang on, I'm going to Google this real quick. Should you put Q-tips in your... On our 400th show, we're going to learn something new. We're going to get some science today. Now, let's see. Let's find a reputable source. Wait, hang on. I see Men's Health. Hang on. Hold on. Men's Health says why it feels so damn good to stick a Q-tip in your ear. I got to see this one. Hang on. You know you shouldn't do it. Here's why you just can't help yourself. It's the constant refrain of ear doctors everywhere. Never stick something smaller than your elbow inside your ear. That pretty much prohibits jabbing Q-tips, toothpicks, hairpins, or car keys in your ears. The problem, doing so feels pretty damn fantastic. There are actually several reasons why we're drawn to digging around in our ears. Some people feel the urge to clean them out and remove the gunk they feel is clogging them up. Also, it does just feel really, really good. That could be because the ear, thought to be an erogenous zone, has a complex system of nerves and nerve endings. People can have referred sensations from other parts of the body, says Seth Pross, MD. The classic example is that people have something in their ear and it feels like something is in their throat. The vagus nerve? Vagus? No, it's not vagus. Vagus? V-A-G-U-S. I'm going to go with vagus. The vagus nerve, a branch-like structure that runs from your brain to your butt, can be stimulated via the ear. This may play a small role in that pleasurable sensation you feel from the Q-tip, and you may feel it anywhere the nerve impacts, including your heart, belly, and even reproductive areas. All right, so you can roll a Q-tip around in your ears, and you can feel it in your nether regions, your private parts. Is that what I'm reading? Another possibility is that your ear is also an area you're normally not used to getting touched. In some ways, it's probably like an armpit that is ticklish because people don't touch that area too often. Some people find that pleasurable. I'm sorry. Tickling in the armpits is never pleasurable. All right, hang on. Let's go back and find the reputable source on why you shouldn't do it. Hang on. Time Magazine. I'll take that. This article dated April 13th, 2016. Swab incidents are really a common clinical thing we see, says Dr. Peter Svider. The way the cotton swab is designed, it's really not a good tool for removing wax. You tend to push more in than you pull out. Expert surveys suggest roughly half of the U.S. population suffers from some level of earwax impaction, or a plugging of the ear canal due to wax that's been jammed into it. Clearing the blockage requires a doctor or specialist's intervention. Time's article continues, so just how are you supposed to clean out all the gunky wax? You really aren't, Burton says. There's wax in your ears for a reason. It ensnares and expels dirt, dust, small insects, and other bits of grossness that would otherwise finagle their way into your body. Earwax is also antibacterial, composed of dead skin cells, fatty acids, and a little cholesterol. Wax is effective at trapping and killing illness-causing microorganisms. Some people say their ears itch because of wax buildup, but it's usually just the opposite, the doctor says. If you clean all the wax away, your ear canal can get dried out and irritated, and then it starts to itch. You don't want all that wax to linger in your ears forever, but your body has a very effective built-in conveyor belt mechanism for removing wax without the aid of a swab. The everyday acts of talking and chewing naturally shuffle wax from your inner ear to the outside of its canal, where the wax falls away on its own or is washed away when you shower. No picking or swabbing required. For 99% of people, that conveyor belt mechanism works well. At this moment, how many people in my listening audience are now declaring that they are the 1% where it doesn't work and they must use? People are looking for excuses. It's like one of my listeners named Crystal. She put a meme on this thread and it says, sometimes I use these Q-tips just because it feels good. It's like a dildo, but for my ear. What? Even my friend, activist and science educator, Yvette D'Entremont, the Psy Babe, chimed in to say, this is the one piece of science that I choose to ignore. Speaking of Yvette D'Entremont.
Hi, I'm Yvette D'Entremont.
And I'm Alice Fawn. And we're the hosts of the new comedy podcast, Two Girls, One Mic. And we want to congratulate Seth on his 400th episode.
So here's to you, Seth, and to at least 400 more episodes of your smooth, velvety voice.
What's up? Trey Crowder here. Just want to give a quick shout out to my buddy Seth Andrews on his 400th broadcast. Good job. I always like to see another godless heathen making good in the world out there. And you need to have me back on sometime. I'm ready to do it. Maybe episode, 473 or something like that. But either way, keep fighting the good fight, waging war against the space fairy. And here's to 400 more. Praise the fake Lord, buddy.
Praise the fake Lord. I'll be right back. Y'all hang on. Behavioral economics. It sounds kind of heavy, right? In layman's terms, we're talking about using psychology to learn about human behavior and economic decision-making, why we do or don't make a rational choice. Things like, why would we pay $5 for a cup of coffee? How do we convince ourselves that a $700 cell phone is still a fair price? What about marketers and what they know and how they can manipulate us into feeling good about what might be a not-so-good purchase? Dr. Scott Hutel is an expert on our brains and how we do and don't use them. He has a lecture at the Great Courses Plus. It's called Behavioral Economics, When Psychology and Economics Collide. He's got this section in the sixth lecture that talks about probability weighting. It sounds really dry when you say it, but it's really interesting stuff. And you've done this. You've weighted probabilities if you've ever had to do things like choose insurance on a rental car, or you entered a contest, or you made lifestyle changes to try to prevent things like cancer. You know, it's just a really helpful exploration on how we as human beings assess our options and then make decisions, good and bad. This is one of over 10,000 lectures that you can enjoy at the Great Courses Plus on a huge variety of subjects. Learn about the brain, history, religion, even hobbies like cooking or playing the guitar. Watch or listen anytime with the Great Courses app. And behavioral economics is a great course to get you started. Get a free trial with unlimited access to their entire library, but you got to use my special URL. You're going to love it. Sign up today at thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth. That's thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth.
Hello, it's Jason Statham.
Hi!
Christopher Walken. I'm John Malkovich, and the three of us all got together to say, congratulations, Seth, on 400 episodes of The Thinking Atheist. All right, who am I kidding? This is Ian Harris. Seth, congratulations, 400 episodes. That is amazing. Keep doing what you do. The world needs more of you, man.
It's Gail Jordan from Recovering From Religion. Congratulations, my brother. Here's to 400 more.
Hello, I'm Lucian Greaves of the Satanic Temple, and I wanted to take a moment to wish a happy 400th episode to Seth Andrews, The Thinking Atheist. I think it's one of the best podcasts in the universe, and I hope there are many more thousands of episodes to come. Hail Satan.
Hail Satan. Shouldn't that be a group chant? I think it's more effective as a group chant. It's more ominous. It's a group. It's like the city council people. In the film Hot Fuzz, did you see that? Where they're like, the greater good, and they would all chant it. So hang on just a second, let's try it again. And
Hail Satan!
That's better. That works for me better. It's got more kick to it. It's funny, I never thought in my lifetime I would ever like associate with the Satanic Temple or interview the high priest of the Church of Satan and walk away thinking, hey, they seem like pretty good people. It just never occurs to someone when they are the product of the Christian faith that they will one day sort of hang out with Satanists and kind of like them. I was conducting a social experiment. I think this was last week, maybe 10 days ago. I posted these on social media, and I just asked a question at the top. I said, do you agree with these? And there were seven things that I just copied and pasted. I said, number one, one should strive to act with compassion and empathy toward all creatures in accordance with reason. Two, the struggle for justice is an ongoing and necessary pursuit that should prevail over laws and institutions. Three, one's body is inviolable, subject to one's own will alone. Four, the freedoms of others should be respected, including the freedom to offend. To willfully and unjustly encroach upon the freedoms of another is to forego one's own. Five, beliefs should conform to our best scientific understanding of the world. We should take care never to distort scientific facts to fit our beliefs. 6. People are fallible. If we make a mistake, we should do our best to rectify it and remediate any harm that may have been caused. And finally, 7. Every tenet is a guiding principle designed to inspire nobility in action and thought. The spirit of compassion, wisdom, and justice should always prevail over the written or spoken word. I posted those 7 points and asked, do you agree with them? And at the bottom, I said, congratulations, you have just agreed with the 7 fundamental tenets of the Satanic Temple. That, by the way, is a great exercise to try with the Christians in your life. Just post those. You can find them online. Just post them. Say, do you agree with these or most of these? Do you agree with the attitude and spirit behind these? And if you get an emphatic yes, you say, congratulations, you are now aligning with the Satanic Temple. Just watch the reactions. They're awesome. Coming up here in just a few, I'm going to have a conversation with a couple of pastors, husband and wife. Well, they're ex-pastors, and they've got a fantastic story that's perfect for show number 400. First, I wanted to bring on, a special guest. He was a caller on the broadcast years ago, and he was so freaking good, and everybody just remembers Steve from Tennessee. I thought it'd be fun to have him back and just kind of shoot the shit for a few minutes. Steve, man, how you doing?
If I was doing any better, I'd be you, man. What's up?
So you posted something the other day on social media, and I got to hear the story. You had like it wasn't even a black eye. It just looked like you got attacked by a mugger. And you posted online what had happened. You got to tell the listeners what's up.
I have actually been mugged. I have actually been robbed at gunpoint on a Jackson, Mississippi street. I have been attacked by bigger, meaner men than I am and survived that. But for the second time this summer, this happens more than once, I was actually pecked in the eye by a chicken. The first time was a breed known as a Golden Comet. They're good layers. I've got 2 of them right here eating out of my hand. The second time was by a very small game hen, a Sumatra game hen, and she is actually a very sweet bird. She flies up on my shoulder. She'll pester me until I feed her. She's out of my hand, but just for some reason, she was on my shoulder. I turned around and looked at her. She looked at me and decided my right eye looked rather tasty, and she gave me a doink right in it with a nice sharp bill, and I spent the next 24 hours in agony. The picture can't even do it justice. I mean, just imagine taking any sharp object and gouging yourself in the eye with it, you know? The old Bible verse, if your eye deceives you, pluck it out. Ugh, that's very cringeworthy now.
Now, we're laughing about this story, but I mean, this could have been serious. Like, the chicken could have blinded you, and for the rest of your life, you would have had to tell that story.
It wasn't even a bar fight. It was a chicken. And she, just gave me a nice little peck in the eye, and I spent the next, probably the next 36 hours with double vision and eye watering, nose running. I was in a lot of pain, but I can finally see clearly now, and guess where I am? I'm sitting in my front yard with a handful of cracked corn, hand-feeding chickens.
Let me ask you a city boy question. Like, are chickens, can they be affectionate like pets?
Yes. It depends on the breed. It depends on how you raise them. These birds I have are free range. They're absolutely no danger of being eaten unless a coyote gets them. Some of them will let you walk right up and pick them up and pet them. Some will not. Some will flog you. Some will run from you. It just depends on the individual bird. It's amazing to me, something with the brain, you know, the size of a pea or whatever, can have such distinct personalities among them. But, they're interesting animals to have around. And like I said, I've got some to eat out of your hand and some that won't have anything to do with you.
Life's changed a lot for the both of us since we first talked on the radio all those years ago, hasn't it?
Life has changed tremendously for me. The ups and downs, the peaks and valleys have been just astronomical in my life. I have, on the bad side, I went through a pretty nasty divorce. I also lost my best friend. He was murdered. It was a violent thing. It was a terrible thing. I mean, the guy who did it will never walk free again, but that just doesn't bring anybody back. And so, I've lost like my lifelong partner in crime on the good side. I'm married again. I spend more time with my children than I ever have. I have a wife who is by my side, who absolutely I couldn't imagine. After my last divorce, I never would have thought I'd get married again. But when the right one comes along, man, you don't let her go.
That's a That's not her in the background, is it? I mean, I'm just double checking.
No. No, she's nowhere near me. I went out and married the one person who worked more than I did, and currently, as I said here, I'm a full time stay at home dad, and she's about 100 miles away working right now. So it's a strange upside down thing. It's a strange upside down thing in my life.
Do me a favor, and it's surreal talking about all this, including all these serious stories with this freaking rooster in the background. But, you know, for those, I have a lot of new listeners since the first time we spoke. Can you recount the story that first introduced us? Can you tell the roll bar story? Because I know there are a lot of people who haven't gone that far back in the archive. I know the audio quality wasn't very good way back in 2000, whatever. So for the new listeners, this is sort of how you and I started to chat, and the story took off. But recount it real fast for me on our 400th show, okay?
Sure thing. And this will be a good way to tell whether or not I'm lying about it, because we'll see how many changes I make. But basically, I was raised in a, you know, religious backwoods Tennessee kind of church, you know, pew jumping and speaking in tongues and so forth. We did everything but handle snakes. I was 10 years old. I went to the altar and, you know, prayed and nothing happened, of course, but I tried to get all saved and everything, got baptized. And we lived in a world where not a sparrow fell from the sky that your heavenly father didn't ordain it. You know, we lived in a world where if the wind blew from the east instead of the west, God changed his mind. So just to that story, I had a stepdad, you know, a stepbrother and so forth, and my stepbrother a little older than I was. And we were hanging around in this little tiny speck of a dot on the map town called Pleasantville. And my stepbrother and his cousin, friend, somebody had been out riding around in this four-wheel drive truck. And they went out and managed to barrel roll this truck over. They barrel rolled it all the way onto its wheels and drove it back to his grandmother's house, which was shared a driveway with a store and a church in this little tiny town here. And they park it in front of the church. And it's 1983. Hickman County, Tennessee. There's no internet. I don't even think we owned an Atari at the time. There's nothing better to do, so it doesn't take long to just draw the crowd. And, you know,
the rooster just making this story. It's just taking us to a whole other level, Steve.
Yeah, you don't want any part of that rooster. But anyway,
go ahead.
Anyway, you know, we got a pretty good crowd there. Everybody's looking over the truck, looking over the boys, and our preacher showed up. And he gets out of the vehicle, gets out of his vehicle, and he surveys the truck, and he surveys the boys, and he declares that God saved them. And he said it in a way like, you know, don't even dare think that anything else happened here. God reached down and saved them. And my stepdad, who had a little bit of a weird thing he did when he went to talk, I've kind of getting it myself as I get older, but he would stammer a little bit at the beginning of a sentence, and he began sentences often with the phrase, "By George," and then he'd be fine. Well, the preacher, of course, he's, you know, laying it out here. God saved him. God saved him. And my stepdad kind of leaned down to me and he goes, "By George, them goddamn roll bars what saved him." And like right there in that moment, in that little instant in time, in my 10-year-old little brain, a switch got flipped. Now, I did not become an atheist. I wouldn't become an atheist until I was nearly 40 years old. All of a sudden, everything I had been taught from the Genesis story to the end of times that we were living in 1983, it was the end of time, of course.
Yeah.
And right then and there, it all got called into question. And that was the very first chink in the armor. That was the very first crack in the dam. And over the next several years, and it was a rather lengthy process, but I finally came to realize everything I had been taught was pure bullshit.
And Rooster just caps that story with an exclamation mark. I mean, that's just beautiful. Like we couldn't have timed it any better. What's the rooster's name? Do you name your animals?
That particular rooster doesn't have a name. He is a Sumatran game rooster. They're a very beautiful breed of bird. He has long black feathers. He's lost a few to an unfortunate encounter with a dog. He is an absolute coward. He was recently beaten up by a small bantam rooster, and he loves to chase our children on their bicycles around the yard, but he's perfectly harmless. He's absolutely all bark and no bite, and he's a pretty good little friend.
Why we love you, Steve, from Tennessee. This is how we know you, Steve, from Tennessee, because you live such a colorful life. Well, it's so good to still be friends and to still be able to connect after all these years. I'm glad to hear your life's in a good place. You know, what's that line from the movie that there's no normal life, there's just life, right? And you just take it a day at a time, right, man?
We take the good with the bad. take them both, and there you have the facts of life. I heard that some wisdom somewhere a long time ago.
Well, Steve, I wish you the best with you and your new family and all your critters and all that stuff. And I know that a lot of people join you as we sort of celebrate show 400 today. So it means a lot that we could talk, okay?
Glad I'm still a part of it, man.
Hey, this is Bart Campolo, humanist chaplain at the University of Cincinnati.
Hi, everyone. This is Sarah Hader from Ex-Muslims of North America.
This is Daryl Ray from Recovering from Religion.
This is Andrew Seidel with the Freedom From Religion Foundation sending a big congratulations to Seth Andrews for his 400th broadcast.
Thanks for all you do. We get many referrals from your show to our chat line and helpline. You are helping many people get over the trauma of religious indoctrination.
I remember coming on The Thinking Atheist now years ago, and I was honored to be there, and Seth always asks intelligent, nuanced, thought-provoking questions, and I'm so, so glad the secular community has a voice like his.
400 amazing, thought-provoking episodes. Wow. So here's to 400 more. Unless, of course, you manage to dismantle religion by then.
Congratulations again, Seth. We all wish you the very, very best.
What an amazing group of people who have been such an encouragement to me. And yes, that does include you. Thank you so very much. I am still chuckling to myself about this last conversation that I just had. It's, I think, a broadcast first for me. I just interviewed a man and his rooster. That might be a career first for me. Steve is awesome. And it's so good to have him and so many wonderful people as part of this family. I really do find a sense of family here at The Thinking Atheist. Going to find it again this weekend. Going to be speaking in Milwaukee on Saturday. And then two dates in Chicago on Sunday. By the way, if you want to go, you can get all the information at sethandrews.net and then click the speaking tab. You'll see all the details are there. Before I get into the last segment of this broadcast, this 400th show, just want to share a story. Not because I'm having a pity party, but because I kind of want to be transparent and provide a little groundwork before we get into the last discussion. You know that as host of The Thinking Atheist, I do almost everything single-handedly. You know, it's partially my fault. I'm kind of a control freak. I mean, I'd like to delegate. The problem is that I really want to make sure that nobody screws up what we have here, right? Because it's so unique and it's so wonderful and so much time and energy and so many resources, such an investment has gone into it that I just wanted to not get messed up. But if you're going to grow, you have to delegate. And that's a challenge for me. And so if you don't delegate very much, burnout becomes an issue. Even if you love what you do, I mean, creative people know what that's like. You know, where you, yeah, I love what I do, but from time to time, you hit this brick wall. You just can't seem to get by it. So a few months ago, I was looking at show number 400. I actually had the discussion, like, should 400 be it? Like, should we go out on top? Should we high-five everybody and say, it's been a great run? That was informed, actually, by something that appeared on my Facebook feed. I think it's been like 2 years, but I haven't forgot it. I will never forget it. And I'm not dogging the guy who said it, because his opinion is valid. But it stuck in my head. Here's what I'm talking about. I was online talking about these creative walls. And, you know, I think I was kind of in a valley where I was just thinking, man, what do we do next? And what do you want to talk about next? I'm having trouble getting the creative juices to flow. And I was just venting online and someone popped in the comments section. I don't know his name. I can't remember. It's not important. And he said something along the lines of, the problem isn't creative block. Your problem is relevance. Everything anybody wants to know, they can already get in the archive. And the message was, is that you've really exhausted all you have to offer us. And anything anybody wants is in your previous library. They can just go browse and find it. So the reason you're struggling is because you have nothing else to contribute. And I'll be honest, that stung. And I talk about how, you know, you don't put too much stock in the comment sections. But I read that and it just terrified me. I didn't tell him this, you know. I may have responded even defensively about how many people listen. And, you know, it's an instinct, right? Well, we have people whose lives are being impacted all around the world, blah, 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 blah. But under the skin, under the surface, I was thinking, holy shit, what if the guy is right? You know, what if everything that I have to contribute has already been contributed? What if everything this show is supposed to be has already been? And if you look at the ubiquity of podcasts, when I first started, there were some, but now everybody and their dog has a podcast. Anybody who wants anything anywhere, they can find it. They have a specific interest or point of focus or style of broadcaster that they like. There's going to be something out there for them. I was faced with the possibility, and it's a legitimate one, that, you know, maybe it's time to hang it up. So when I read someone's admittedly snarky comment that, you know, the show, yeah, I mean, people are listening, but are you relevant? Does it matter? I carried that with me for a long time. I still, in some ways, carry it with me today. And from time to time, I'll get into that valley. Does it matter? In an ocean of varying podcasts, several hosts on more than one podcast, is the Thinking Atheist still relevant to people's lives? Is it something that they still look forward to and enjoy? How can I do the show better? Does it matter anymore? You know, I was in one of those valleys, and I got this email. I got this email from a couple, Catherine and Sheldon. And at the end of the email, I was almost in tears. I was so, if I have goosebumps now, just telling you the story, I was so affected by it. And, you know, they had no idea that, you know, this sort of came at this serendipitous time. Like in the church, we would have said that this was divine providence. Well, the Lord just moved them to reach out. The Spirit led them, you know, into my email inbox at just the right time to minister to my heart. Right. This is how we would have phrased it. But it was just right there at a great time. And it just fueled my engine all over again. And I was so intrigued by their story as pastors. They were 20 years in the church that I thought, you know, what better representation of what the Thinking Atheist broadcast was and is and wants to be than a conversation with two people immersed in superstition, preaching from the pulpit, who now stand on the other side of the conversation. As much of an encouragement as they've been to me, I'll bet they can encourage you as well. And so they're kind enough to join me right here, Catherine and Sheldon. It is an honor to talk to you.
Well, we're so honored to be even asked, Seth.
Yeah, it's great to have the opportunity to talk to you.
I'm a little starstruck. I don't know if you don't realize the impact that you've made on us, so we're really grateful.
Well, I mean, I'm so honored and flattered by the words. I'm kind of blown away by this whole story. You two were both pastors, is that right?
Yes, we were.
Yes.
All right, well, flesh it out. What kind of pastor? What were your roles? What was that like?
We've been in the ministry. We were in the ministry, for probably 20 years in different capacities. The most recent one was as senior pastors of a Victory Church, but we've done a lot of different ministering in a lot of different charismatic, I guess, types of churches over the years.
Speaking in tongues and all that kind of stuff, or what?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was, Christianity was absolutely everything that, it dictated everything we did. It was our whole lives. Yeah, speaking in tongues, we believed in healing, miracles.
Well, we believed in divine direction from God. So we did some crazy, crazy ass shit in the name of you know, God promoting this. I was an unstoppable force then.
I would pay to see that on your victory marquee. Next Sunday, crazy ass shit. Join us at 11. Were you preaching from the pulpit or what?
I preaching from the pulpit and a lot of other engagements outside of our own congregation with some ministries here in Canada.
Yeah, we used to do a lot of speaking at conferences and women's groups and men's groups. Sheldon's been on TV a couple of times. We were in deep, Seth.
How big a time investment are we talking about? How many years?
Well, 20, over 20 for me, and Sheldon was born into it.
I'm 49. I'll be 50 at Christmas. And I was born with the knowledge that, God was real. And I never once considered him not being real until recently.
Well, Sheldon, help me understand that now. Born with the knowledge, meaning what? When you're born, you're kind of a blank slate. I mean, was it that your mom and dad believed? I mean, flesh that out.
Well, I was born in a town of 3,000 people with probably six churches, and the Pentecost church, being one of the largest, had a congregation of over 500-600 people. So a big percentage of the community attended church and believed in God. And right from childhood, that's instilled. You're indoctrinated at a young age.
Sheldon's father was in the ministry, and he went to a Pentecostal school.
Yeah.
Growing up, so very segregated.
Part of the, you know, the kids programs in school, and the crusaders, and the Sunday school, and I think it was about four times a week. So time investment was a very extensive time investment made at the church, you know.
My mom was a product of the Pentecostal church. I remember she was always hoping that those Baptists would just come around and see the true word.
Exactly.
Did you guys go down that path?
Oh, well, definitely.
For us in this little town where we grew up, it was the Salvation Army. we would say things like, you know, they're saved, but they're saved in the Salvation Army way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, one day maybe they'll actually come to know the fruits of the Spirit and experience the full love of Jesus. Right now, they've got kind of a compromised, muted faith.
Yep. It's so strange, because one of the greatest things about coming out of it is actually seeing people differently than we have for so many years. We didn't realize, you know, church promotes unity. We used to talk a lot about unity. And when you're in it, you don't see that it's actually having the opposite effect, that it's us and them. It's actually causing division. And now that we're out of it, we don't see people as less than or you know, they have to get the truth that we have.
Yeah, I get you totally. I had to reevaluate almost every aspect of my life once I emerged from the religious framework.
Yeah. Last night we had this conversation about how a lot of people are in religion, or they call themselves Christians or whatever religion. And when they see the ridiculousness of it, it's so much easier for some people just to let it go, because religion is kind of added onto their lives. So when they see that it's silliness, you know, they can just let it go. But for other people, you can't just remove, like, we didn't just couldn't just remove God or the church or religion, because it was the very, like, every single thing that we did and how we thought and what we spoke and what we did was all absolutely tied to the concept of God. So it wasn't just a matter of saying, you know, not going to church or saying, oh, well, we just don't believe in God anymore. It really was a deprogramming of our thought processes, and still going on now.
Was the pastorate your livelihood, or did you have other jobs? How critical was the move out of the church? Was it a financial as well as a spiritual hit?
No, we had left the church probably, maybe 3 years ago?
Yes.
Yeah. When we
also had a separate business,
yeah,
other than the ministry. We would say a secular business, construction company.
Yeah.
So we didn't totally depend on it for groceries.
I got paid. We got paid, but it was, you know, very little. And basically, we just tied it back to the church. So it was more of a labor of love. I mean, we completely believed what we were doing. We were very sincere. We really wanted to reach people.
I'm glad you two said that. You know, there's sometimes, especially among lifelong atheists or those who just, maybe they're just cynical from having so many arguments. And I understand how it can happen. But they have this picture of the pastor in their heads, that they're all just scam artists who are skating on a tax-free income and the parsonage exemptions. And you know, I try to convey to them that the vast majority of the people who are pastors that I have ever met don't make a great living, and they work all the time, and they genuinely believe in what they're doing.
Absolutely. And I've seen, I've joined a couple of atheist Facebook groups, and I hear that a lot about pastors and leaders being dishonest. And I'm sure there's lots out there. You know, I know there's lots out there. But I agree. Like, I know for us, we just really loved people. I mean, I got paid $200 a week and to be on call 24/7. And you know how long it takes to, you know, prepare a sermon and deliver a sermon and organize church services and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it definitely was from a place of love for people. We were sincere, but, you know, we were sincerely wrong.
Sheldon, were you on call? Were you like doing the hospital visits and going to people's homes and, you know, charity efforts and all that stuff?
I was involved. Catherine was more involved with that aspect of the ministry, but I certainly was involved with speaking engagements and what was considered evangelical. An evangelist, so yeah. I would be evangelizing people. You know, it's kind of funny how things come full circle, because I keep telling myself that at the time, I wasn't purposely deceiving people. I genuinely wanted to see their lives change because my life was changed, but I didn't realize that it wasn't changed for the better till now. And now it's changed for the better, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to make you do anything that's uncomfortable, because I know this may be painful, but I mean, give me an example of the kind of message you might preach, if you're okay with that. I mean, what might you say to me as a member of the flock?
I found that very early on, because I was raised with a pastor as a father. My father was a pastor when I was a child, that it's very easy to approach people's emotions. I didn't realize it at the time, and it wasn't intentional, but I always talked, instead of talking about details about heaven and hell and damnation and what the devil looks like, I didn't have enough information about that, but I would tell people that God has a plan for their life, a plan and a purpose. And I always try to comfort people with saying, you know, this is just a temporary problem right now. And if you turn your life over to Jesus, everything's going to be okay. You know, don't worry about the fact you have cancer. Everything's going to be okay. I'm going to lay hands on you and pray and something's going to magically happen. But I was hook, line, and sinker. I would talk to people at a grocery store and pray with them in the aisles, you know, speak in tongues in public. I mean, right over now, I look at it,
I think a lot of Christians, we put a lot of value on personal experiences. So, you know, like when Sheldon's saying that he, you know, would just basically tell people that God loved them. I think eventually we got to the place where we studied the Bible for so long that things started to fall away until we got to the place where the only doctrine that we thought made sense was the fact that God existed. You know, like we used to preach on healing, and yet we would see so many people dying of cancer. And, you know, some people we would think got healed, you know, but then other people didn't. So we had to let go of healing, and the whole thing with hell didn't seem like it made sense. So we never talked about hell, and heaven seemed like it was really vague and like streets of gold and mansions and stuff. That didn't make any sense. And then we had two kids. We have two adult children who are gay. And that was a huge thing for them coming out when we were pastors. And when we looked into that, that was another piece of the Bible that we kind of had to dismiss. And so eventually, the more we looked critically at things, the less doctrinal truths we actually had to hold on to.
You actually were reasoning yourself out of an unreasonable faith.
Yes.
The unreasonable faith, like, yes. Even with the doctrine that we were following, eventually, even if you follow the doctrine, you'll come up with the conclusion that God is love. And, you know, I'm not saying that I know he doesn't exist, but my message was always that my belief was, well, God is love, and I don't understand a lot of it, and I don't need to. What you need to understand is God is love, and everything's going to be okay. And unfortunately, that's led people and myself down the wrong path. I've seen people refuse treatment. And
we have family members currently
dying
with cancer who won't seek medical treatment. We've seen people, like people that we know, have died from believing in healing and not having medical treatment. And we were part of, like, we thought that was,
we promoted that,
made
kind of
sense.
Belief.
That made sense then, you know?
Trials in this life and joy and wholeness in the next, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yes.
That's basically what I promoted as my...
You were kind of a motivational coach. You like help people cope with difficult times. Uh-huh. You build them up. You're rah-rah. You're special. You know it's going to be all right.
Yes.
And you hug them, right? And the community aspect of it is major, because we're all together. We're all doing things that human beings do. So just being together and supporting each other person to person was probably huge for you guys.
Yes. And it made me feel special, because people would say, Sheldon, I'm saved, but I'm not saved like you are. I'm not on fire like you are. So that made me feel that I had something special. And I suffer with ADHD and OCD and some things. And that played right into the preaching, and anxiety sometimes would take over. And you know, I would stutter and jump and clap, and people would get so excited and say, well, that's the Holy Ghost working. And now I realize that I can take pills and stop the Holy Ghost from working in my life. I don't have to jump back. Wow. You know?
Well, so when you end up in this sort of deist position, how did you end up taking the next step? Because that's often the hardest, you know, when you actually begin to challenge whether or not there might be a supreme being.
It is.
Yeah. And you know, we've talked about this a lot because it kind of blows my mind that we never really considered whether it was true or not. It's so strange that we could get to the place where actually what happened was our adult daughter was visiting us, and she was the very first person to ever challenge that last belief that we were holding, that God was real. She's the very first person to actually say, like, have you actually looked into any other alternate theories, you know? Yeah. And that's exactly what happened, Seth. So she was here visiting, and we had this wonderful conversation. And I go on YouTube and do a search, and your video, The Top 10 Creation Arguments, is the first thing that we watched.
That, Seth, it was life-changing because
it seemed so simple once we saw it, but it took somebody, because you have to have that paradigm shift. I mean, pretty much everybody in North America is born and raised thinking at some point, at some level, people believe in God because it's everywhere. You know, it's in the schools and it's on the TV. It's everywhere. You really can't escape it. And so some people probably never examine it. We never examined it.
No.
And then we watched Christianity Made Me Talk Like an Idiot. And basically we just started watching more.
Thanks, Seth. You made me feel like an idiot. I realized for the very first time that I never once, not only did not question it, but when I would examine my faith, I would always examine my faith compared to someone else's faith.
Yeah.
So I would compare normally in the same religion. Like I would compare myself to Salvation Army,
right.
Seventh-day Adventist, Jehovah Witness, different
yeah.
denominations. But I never
yeah.
once in 48 years did anyone I ever compare it to. Well, does God really exist? Is any of it true?
Yeah.
And once there was a crack in the dam, I think intelligence really
yes.
kicked in. And there's a whole wealth of information that I would never look at because I was afraid of being deceived. Because I was told as a child that if you fill your head with something other than what's in the Bible, you'll be led astray with, of course, now I know led astray with the truth. Heaven forbid. Let's not get led astray with facts and truth and science. Let's stick to the magic, you know.
But that's true, though. We did, we went 20 years, Seth, 20 years. I did not read a non-Christian book in 20 years. We didn't listen to secular music 20 years. We didn't watch anything that was more than PG rated. You know, we just watched our first horror movie this summer in over 20 years.
Scared the bejesus out of me.
But Christianity is a culture of not trusting in your own understanding. And, you know, you have to watch your thoughts and make sure you're not feeding yourself the wrong thing. So we were very sheltered from any outside information, any other, you know, other theories. The only thing we ever argued about was whose God was right, not whether or not there was actually a God.
I'm talking here with Catherine and Sheldon. They are two ex-pastors who you currently live in Canada, is that right? Which part?
Yes.
We live in Newfoundland, a fishing village of about 50 people where you can imagine how popular we are as atheists.
Well, I'm still stuck on Pentecostals in Canada. I figured you for Catholicism. I didn't realize you had a Pentecostal movement.
Oh, no, there's a lot of Pentecostal churches and you know, full gospel and charismatic churches all over Canada.
So when this kind of thing is so much of your identity, though, Catherine, when you're out on the other side of it, do you mourn? Do you grieve it? Are you happy? Where are you at?
Well, Seth, it's been such an impact for me that I actually, for the first time in 48 years, and I'm thankful to the Clergy Project
yes.
that provided some counseling, and it was it opened the door to some freer thought for me and trying to get my identity, because I thought my whole life somebody was not only watching me, but they knew my every thought,
yes,
the intentions of my every thought.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, having some issues like ADHD, there's a lot of thoughts and they're pretty fast. And God was keeping up with them. And when I took God out of the picture, I found myself for the first time making decisions by myself.
Yeah.
48 years old, making decisions without consulting my imaginary friend.
Yeah.
In every area of life. And I think that's a big thing. I think if people could understand, you know, I preached about freedom in Jesus. There's no freedom in Jesus. The freedom is when you let these ideas go and start looking at the facts.
Yes.
And I'm free for the very first time and working on getting freer, you know.
Yeah. You know, I was, I don't know if I'd be able to explain to be able to articulate the difference. I feel like I have my own brain back for the first time in over 20 years. To be able to make decisions about where we go and what we do and who we hang out with is huge. It's really taken some deprogramming. And, you know, yesterday I rewatched that video, Christianity Made Me Talk Like an Idiot. And at the end of it, Seth, I cried when you got to the part where you said, I've come late to the party, but for what it's worth, I'm glad to be here. I feel the exact same way. We've missed out on 20 years of culture and entertainment and education and other people's perspectives and friendships. And we've missed out on so much. And that's what we feel like. We're two 50-year-old babies in a lot of respects. We're learning who we are ourselves, you know, and how to think for ourselves when we don't have an imaginary friend to guide us or to keep us in line.
Yes.
So from what I've heard then, I mean, if they gave you a chance to plug back into the Matrix, if you had the chance to just erase it all and go back and never be the wiser.
Not a chance.
No, never again. No. Once you see
behind the curtain,
behind it, you can't. I don't know how somebody could go back.
Well, if I may, I'd like to encourage you, as much as you've encouraged me, you know, I'd mentioned on the show, and I think I'd mentioned in a few other contexts, that after you do 400 broadcasts, and after you do so many thousands of air miles, and after you do so many of this and that, and you're just one guy, I do find myself occasionally, even when the statistics come in and you see the numbers, and you're like, oh yeah, there are people out there, it's often difficult to maintain. It's probably a lot like being a pastor. You feel like that you love what you do and you know you love what you do, but it takes so much of you to commit to that. And it's just such a 24/7 thing that you find I think someone mentioned that self-care is hard for people like that. Did you notice that when you were pastors? Like, it's hard to decompress and shut it off and reboot your brain and you burn yourself out, right?
Yeah.
But Seth, I hope you are encouraged, because the truth of the matter is the videos that we have watched, we've watched a variety of different videos. We usually do it Sunday morning instead of going to church.
Oh, this is what we do Sunday mornings. Yes, we watch watch atheist videos. We watch yours. We love the atheist experience as well. We watch Matt religiously.
Yeah. And what it's done is it's providing not just ammunition, but it's providing the facts that's needed. So your reward might not be in heaven, of course, because it doesn't exist, but you don't have to wait for eternity. Reward is now. I mean, I'm on the east coast of Canada in a town, like Catherine said, of 50, 60 people, but I've been set free, not through supernatural forces, but because a man took the time to put the video together.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I don't want to blow you up too high here, but it really has made a profound difference. The video I saw of the little baby with the blue eyes.
Oh,
I mean,
that one was absolutely eye-opening. Again, it's one of those ones that we watch and it's like, how the hell did we not see this before?
Yeah.
Well, I was in your very shoes, you know, like 10, 11 years ago. And just know that for a guy like me who does what he does, who's desperate to know that it mattered somewhere, the fact that you would reach out to me and encourage me and be a part of this show and talk about your own extrication from superstition and your liberation beyond it, and to just be so, you're not just encouraging me, but I'm sure thousands of people in the listening audience. I can't think of a better way to celebrate 400 shows than to have a conversation like this one. So you two mean the world to me, and it's a great gift what you've given me. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And liberated from superstition is a really great way of putting it.
Liberated from superstition. Yes.
Yeah. We might be middle-aged, but at least we got a few years left to enjoy in truth and freedom and with grace. brains.
We'll be following your journey, and you can follow the rest of our journeys, and I think we'll all just continue to do what human beings do, and that's to be there for each other, to try to make every day a discovery, to maximize every moment, and we'll just pursue the truth wherever that is, okay? And until then, all my best to you both, and I'm so excited to have met you.
Well, thank you very much, Seth.
You too.
Likewise.
And that'll do it for this broadcast. 400 shows in the can. So raise a glass. And salute and thank you so much for everything you are, everything you do, and everything you mean to me, this show, this community. It is just an amazing thing to behold. Have a wonderful week. I will see you back here next time on the Thinking Atheist radio broadcast. Take care.
Follow the Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on the Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.